Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When the first of the month rolls around in April, many of the millions who were fine in March, but now unemployed by the coronavirus pandemic, face uncertainty about making rent. There is help. The $2.2 trillion relief package includes more than $2 billion in rental assistance, $685 million for public housing, and a temporary moratorium on evictions. The Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court has asked municipal courts to limit eviction proceedings. But the financial shock of the pandemic isn't over. Dima Williams covers real estate for Forbes magazine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Rent payments are one thing to someone making a solid six-figure income and another thing to someone in the gig economy working a side job in a restaurant, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What kind of differences are you seeing in those two different markets?
Well, first of all, as you talked about, you know, people's ability to pay rent come tomorrow. Usually renters in a lot of cities are people that don't make a lot of money, not necessarily high income earners. So in that regard, there's, you know, the concern whether those people will be able to pay rent tomorrow. And on the higher, kind of the higher end or luxury real estate, even if you want to call it, people are also worried. I mean, they're pausing transactions, mostly. I mean, some of them are doing that because they have a lot of, you know, of their wealth tied in the stock market, and the stock market isn't doing good either. So for them, it's not, you know, it might not sound savvy to, you know, invest in a multi-million property, whether it's, you know, a penthouse in Manhattan or, you know, a country house. So I think the impact is felt across across income brackets and across the economy.
And this is just the beginning, right?
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of, you know, experts smarter than me say. So, yeah, well, I think for, you know, in April, we'll start to actually see more of the impact just because there will be sales volumes, sale price numbers released for the month of March. So right now, everything is just anecdotally. I heard this, I heard that.
Right.
But we'll have numbers in April, and most probably we'll have a really soft second quarter in the real estate market and the economy, the whole economy.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking now about the impact of the coronavirus financial downturn and how it relates to housing. Right now, we're talking to people about people with housing, with landlords and people they owe, with banks they owe mortgage money to. But coming up later in the program, we're going to focus on people who don't even have that, who are homeless, who are very housing insecure. If you have a question or comment about the market as it stands, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest right now is Dima Williams. She's a real estate contributor to Forbes magazine. So what kind of concessions are landlords making for their tenants at this point?
Yeah, well, we're seeing concessions in terms of landlords, you know, willingly suspending rent payments for some time or offering, tenants to make, you know, less or to kind of schedule their payments so that they don't have to pay the full rent for a period of time. They're also offering, extensions of the rent if they can make the payments now, but they can add, you know, maybe 3 months to their kind of rent period at the end when it's supposed to expire. So I think that a lot of landlords across the country from, you know, people that I've spoke to are trying to be very flexible and understanding and offering adjustments to people that are affected by the coronavirus outbreak.
The $2 billion that was set aside for rental assistance in the relief package, what are the terms of that? How does that work?
I'm honestly not really sure. I know that people have to prove that they're affected by the coronavirus outbreak. But even if one thing that is good is that, on the other hand, multifamily mortgage borrowers, meaning property owners, can seek forbearance for 30 days. So, I mean, 30 days initially, and then they can extend that period up to 3 months in total. So during that time, they actually cannot evict tenants if they're getting, you know, assistance through the so-called CARES Act. So in that way, tenants are also a little bit, you know, have a protection if they're not able to pay their rent, that they cannot be evicted for 3 months.
And what about rent freezing? Has that emerged as a response to all of this anywhere?
Yes, in some places, their rent freezes, whether, you know, landlords are willingly deciding not to increase rent, or it comes from, you know, city or, you know, local governments. But I think it's just logical, just because, you know, it's hard to find renters now, just because, you know, people are staying put. They might have shelter in place orders, but just because the fear and the people's general anxiety, a lot of people just decide not to do anything, so they want to stay in their homes, in their units. So it's, you know, it's a logical thing to freeze rent.
Let's see, Lewis in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lewis.
Hey, Anne. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a question about, you know, I live in one of these, there's a lot of luxury apartments in Columbus, and that's a very fortunate situation I find myself in. But my wife and I had planned to move and closed on a house and, you know, come to find out, oh, here's COVID-19. And I'm just curious if there's anything kind of in the discussion about these large penalties for breaking leases for luxury apartments, because in some cases they're in the multi-thousands of dollars and don't really account for, you know, the crisis that we're in.
So you're saying that you want to move, but right now because of COVID-19 you can't, which means you have to stay in your apartment.
Yes and no. If people are in my situation, the housing market in Columbus certainly didn't prepare for COVID-19.
Right.
And if you're trying to move, whether you're downgrading from one of these luxury apartments or you're just moving into a house, the penalty to break the lease is quite expensive. And, you know, it's not necessarily something my wife and I accounted for, being able to make these payments when both of us are unable to work at this time.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, thank you, Lewis, for that call. Dima Williams, there is an issue about the mobility of people and the problems that COVID-19 has caused financially, and not just financially, but logistically, too, right?
Yes. Yeah. But in a lot of places, moving companies have been declared essential service. So they still operate. So if you really want to move, despite what's going on right now around the country, chances are you would be able to. But as, you know, Wes was saying, I think you should just work with the landlord and see whether they can, you know, come to an understanding, just because, you know, nobody expected this to happen. So everybody's kind of trying to figure it out as we go. On the sales side, though, some people are now implementing coronavirus contingency. So if something happens and they just can't move, they can't make payments on their, you know, new home, they can break the contract and have no penalty. So maybe that's something that, you know, landlords and tenants or people trying to move right now will also be kind of drawn to and implementing their own contracts.
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel the, I wouldn't say panic, but the concern in Lewis's voice. I mean, a lot of people, it's not just, you know, the gig economy can also reach into higher incomes. People now that their accounts have been suspended, their projects have been put on hold, that means their money's not coming in either. It's really across the spectrum until you get to be extremely wealthy and independently wealthy.
Yes. Yeah.
What What about the rental market? I mean, a lot of people, I thought it was interesting what you wrote about how some people are planning to move, but the apartment that they were moving into is being occupied by someone in quarantine.
Yep. I mean, that is a situation that definitely can happen. I talked to a couple of agents and they were like, yeah, that's a possibility. They haven't heard of anybody actually having that problem.
Okay.
But usually when that happens or for any reason that you can't move in the apartment when, you know, moving date comes in, landlords or property management companies, usually they try to accommodate you. They'll put you in an apartment that's comparable to what you signed the lease for, or they'll put you in a hotel room until your apartment is ready. If, you know, it's no fault of your own that you cannot move on that date.
Does this mean there's probably going to be a big slowdown in the rental market? People are going to stay in place and that's going to affect the shift?
Yes, people are, I mean, industry experts are expecting that rent renewal rates will go up as people don't want to move around.
And what about the private housing market? The caller just said they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place now. They're both of their incomes are gone and they were planning on moving into a house.
You mean the housing market?
The housing market, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's slowing down too. We still haven't seen the numbers for March, so I can't really quote any, you know, statistics. But there have been studies or like flash surveys released, and the supply of homes that come on the market has decreased. The National Association of Realtors reported a week ago that, you know, on March 16th, for markets where there were COVID-19 cases at that time, 32% of the agents that they surveyed said that the supply of homes was down. Some people are, you know, suspending their home searches too. Mortgage applications have declined for last week. They were 14% down week over week, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, and about 11% down year over year. So both sellers and buyers are cautious and, you know, postponing probably any activities that they wanted to do in the real estate market.
Well, Dima Williams, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dima Williams is a real estate contributor to Forbes magazine. Coming up, we're going to drill down into the issue for people who are housing insecure, people who are homeless, maybe living in shelters, maybe don't even have that much protection from the elements. So if you have a question or comment about that issue, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Housing is a basic need that is increasingly threatened for millions of Americans grappling with the financial fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. Federal, state, and local governments are responding to not only help people stay in their homes, but also find better shelter for people who qualify as homeless. Michelle Heritage is the executive director of the Community Shelter Board, which is particularly focused on the needs of homeless people in Columbus and Franklin County. Last year, they served 15,000 people. Welcome back, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
Bill Faith is the executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. It's a statewide coalition that promotes a range of housing assistance services, including homeless prevention programs, emergency shelters, and permanent affordable housing with supportive services. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Ann.
You've described the situation at emergency shelters across Ohio as in double jeopardy, at the center of two crises. How so?
Well, we have people that are housing insecure, and we also have the coronavirus. Those are sort of the two issues that make people in double jeopardy, because people that have no homes to stay in cannot shelter in place very well. People that have no homes can't go home when they're not feeling well. They have no place to isolate. They have no place to increase their sanitation and ability to keep them and their families safe. So that's the double jeopardy that people are facing across the state.
And Michelle Heritage, I'm sure, I mean, you guys are going to be talking basically about the same things, but a little bit more focus. How many people are we talking about in Columbus who are in that situation? In Franklin County, I should say.
Well, absolutely. So, you know, when we look at our point-in-time numbers on any, you know, one night, we can say, hey, we've got about 1,200 folks that are using shelter, and then probably, you know, another 400 to 500 that are out on the land. And so, you know, it's a big issue. And what we also know is there's some confounding factors, and that means we are already seeing people showing up at shelter who are sharing with us that they have been unstably housed. They've been staying with their cousin or their friend or their sister on the couch, and they've been asked to move on. And it is a significant number of people that we are seeing newly homeless because of this pandemic, in addition to the folks that were already experiencing homelessness. And then that's the front door coming in. On the back door, it is extremely difficult right now for our partners to get people housed quickly out of shelter. And that has a lot to do with not being able to meet with the landlords. The landlords, many are hesitant to rent their places right now. They don't want to meet with people. A lot of places are closed down, so businesses working at a different pace, or maybe some things are not available that we would need. So both the front door is getting swamped and the back door is getting clogged up.
Bill Faith, at shelters, what kinds of strategies are there to help people stay safer when there isn't the ability to socially distance?
Well, and it did issue the report, Double Jeopardy. We laid out a number of strategies that we are employing right now. I know, Michelle is working on this in Columbus, but all over the state, we have 10,000 people approximately in these congregate facilities where social distancing is very difficult. They're in over 300 different locations. People are living this way right now. It's this normal way that homeless people try to survive. First strategy is let's decrease the density in these facilities. So we are moving people out into hotels and motels, finding other community space. Our goal is to move 5,000 people out into less congregate locations all over the state. So we are deploying resources to help get that done. We are making requests under FEMA to get dollars to do this. The governor's working on that for us. We are looking at other resources to deploy to accomplish that. Secondly, is to deal with the issues that Michelle mentioned. We have to divert people away from coming into the homeless system. We have to use diversion strategies. Maybe give them some rent assistance money. Maybe if they were kicking in to the household, their sister wouldn't need to ask them to leave. There's any number of things we might be able to do to divert people, or use homelessness prevention dollars to let people stay where they are instead of abandoning their current housing and coming to shelter. So those are immediate things that we are trying to deploy across the state, and it's beginning to work. Communities are embracing these strategies, and it's not without challenges, sure, but it is beginning to work.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can talk a little bit about what we're doing here in Columbus and Franklin County and kind of to illustrate what Bill is talking about. He's exactly right. We're following two critical pathways. That first critical pathway is to deconcentrate these shelters. We've got to get social distancing in our shelters. And to Bill's point, a homeless shelter in general is basically everything the CDC says you don't want to have during this pandemic. And so we've got to get social distancing. What we're going to be doing, and we've already started, is we've opened one new shelter. The YMCA is our partner there, and a shout-out to them for their heroic efforts. We've opened that first shelter, and we've taken men out of the shelter array that is typically in Columbus, and so that those shelters can spread those beds out, spread everybody out, and get social distancing. We're going to have to open two more of those shelters. And when we did our data analysis, really based on a report that COHIO did, this double jeopardy report, mm-hmm. we're going to need 600 additional beds. So total 600 additional beds just to get everyone socially distanced appropriately. The second critical path is a path about what do we do with individuals who are experiencing homelessness and they are COVID positive, or they've been certified they're COVID symptomatic, or they've been exposed to someone and need to be quarantined. And we have to open what we're calling shelters for isolation and quarantine. We're going to open four of those additional shelters, and those will be for folks that are COVID positive and experiencing homelessness that don't need to be in the hospital. Just like Bill said, for the rest of us, we'd be at home trying to recuperate on the couch. For folks that need quarantine, we've got to keep them separated because they are at risk. And for folks in isolation, we've obviously got to be monitoring them. So we're standing up four medicalized shelters. I want to say a shout out to a couple entities. One is the City of Columbus and Mayor Ginther's office. They have been arm in arm with us as a partner, as a leader, blocking and tackling and knocking down all the barriers. They've offered their rec centers and other places, and we could not be doing this without them. Mid-Ohio Food Bank has stepped up and is going to be feeding everyone in all of these shelters. Again, we would be lost without them. And then the Columbus Health Department and Dr. Roberts have been an incredible partner in advising us how to stand these shelters up. We're not, you know, the medical professionals, and so they've really been arm in arm with us to help us. How do you set these up?
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, just set them up and then maintain them and
right.
and have the personnel available, because once you're talking about isolation, that's a medical term.
Well, and so exactly. So people are actively ill. And so our hospital systems and our Columbus Public Health has been helping us to set up telehealth, to provide a nurse that will be helping to check on folks. But we're going to have to stand up four of those shelters for almost 400 people who will be sick at the height of this pandemic. So when you think about getting the staff resources in an already thinly stretched system, mm-hmm. the medical resources, and then the cost is exorbitant. We think that, you know, this is in the millions of costs versus what we have. So the additional need for just resources, both to keep the folks experiencing homelessness safe, the staff working with them, and the general public, because we just cannot have people on the streets who are having these COVID challenges. It is dangerous to everyone involved.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about people who are housing insecure and the worst of the worst, the people who are either without any shelter at all or forced to live in shelters where the social distancing isn't really possible. My guests who are describing how they're responding to this, Michelle Heritage, she's executive director of the Community Shelter Board, focuses largely on Franklin County and Columbus, and also Bill Faith, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, which is more of a statewide perspective. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill Faith, I'm thinking about people who are chronically homeless. Are we expecting this surge to be greater, to be worse in that population of 10 to 12,000 statewide?
Well, yes, we got to realize the numbers that Michelle described are what is like a snapshot in time. We have to plan for the immediate plans are for the next 6 months. Remember what our public health folks are telling us, that this won't even peak till mid-May. That means incrementally every day we'll have more and more people that are exposed and that have the virus. So we're going to get up to 10,000 a day in Ohio. That's for the general population. And then the staircase will start to go down from there. So this will continue on into the summer, even though none of us want that case. We need to face that we are looking at the curve going well into summer, and then we might have a bit of a lull, and then there could be additional surges and outbreaks in the fall. So the volume of people that we're really talking about in normal times over that kind of a time span gets into 70, 80,000 people. And it's only going to get bigger because all the people that lost their jobs that are hanging on, that were already kind of marginally housed or already housing secure, this could take them over the edge. They will be seeking assistance. We need to do more to prop them up, like provide rental assistance so they could stay in place. We don't have capacity to incorporate all those needs into our homeless system. So that's a big worry about how much these numbers will balloon the longer this thing goes on. And we just need to prepare ourselves and work together. There is a role that every person can play in helping with this. It seems overwhelming, and it is in some ways. But we have large amounts of federal dollars that are coming to help us and help Michelle address these needs. We anticipate those should arrive in the next 30 days, if we're lucky, and more likely 60 days. The federal government is not the most nimble partner, but they're going to deploy fast, they say. They'll be expedited in every way, they say. So we hope that's true. But that first 60 days is the period that I'm most worried about.
Yeah.
I mean, we emptied out our savings account to put this money out on the street. We put out $500,000 of our own money. We don't have a lot. And we, you know, I think people need to help Michelle. I mean, they need to donate to the shelter board for this effort. And they could donate through the Ohio Pandemic Relief Fund. We will distribute that money out rapidly to other parts of Central Ohio and around the state to help these groups get through really the next critical 60-day period until the cavalry arrives with the bigger money from the federal government.
Michelle Heritage, here in Franklin County, what are the bean counters telling you about how this closure at the front end and this clogging at the back end, how it's going to increase the numbers?
Well, we don't have a bead really on how much we think the numbers are going to increase. We're seeing that, you know, this is one of those things where no one's ever been through this before, so we just don't know. Mm-hmm. What we do know is at the height of this pandemic, for us to run all these additional shelters, it'll be $400,000 additional for the social distancing shelters and 1.2 million additional for the shelters for isolation and quarantine a month, Anne.
Wow.
A month. And so it really is. It's to Bill's point, I liken this to we are running both a sprint and a marathon.
Yeah.
Because the sprint is we've got to get all this stuff up and running. We can't have folks who are experiencing homelessness getting stuck in hospitals or worse, being on the street because we don't have a plan for them. And so, you know, what we are looking at is that tsunami has occurred in the ocean. The wave is coming at us, and we have to run as fast as we can so that we can get everything stood up. So we're ready. And that's what we're doing right now.
Are you talking with hospitals about strategies about how they release?
Oh, absolutely. We're putting protocols, all four of the hospital systems. We actually have a call with them every single day. And our health departments and Franklin County Emergency Management, our city mayor's office, and our county commissioners to plan for this. And so we're planning on how we're ramping all of this up and how we're going to be able to, you know, meet the needs at the highest level.
Let's see, Pam in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pam.
Good morning, Anne, and thank you so much. This is a very vital topic. I think I just think about it yesterday. I make house calls, and I know where some of the homeless people stay. But my question is for your two guests is, has there been any thought to how the religious community, other than providing spiritual guidance, can step forward and help? Because a lot of those most of the churches are having virtual services. They've closed their doors. Many of them are pretty large, pieces of land, or their sanctuaries are rather large, and they have large fellowship halls. So I'm wondering, and also several people are retired or near retiring, doctors and nurses and health providers that go to church. So I'm wondering how we can help other than donating, which is good too.
That's fantastic. So here's what I'll tell you for Columbus and Franklin County. If you are a person who would like to help, and there's so many ways that we need your help. We need people who want to do things hands-on, folks to put food boxes together. We need folks to gather things like reusable water bottles and sweatpants and sweatshirts and underwear and things like this. So all of those kinds of needs. We need folks that want to work in these shelters. We've got to hire a huge amount of people, and we're doing that as fast as we can. We also, if you know a location where you think would be suitable, we'd like to hear about any and all of those locations. And you can contact Sarah Loken at Community Shelter Board. And the best way to get her is sloken, L-O-K-E-N, at csb.org. We are really open to any and all ideas about space and about volunteerism and about what folks want to do to help. We can get you put to work, I promise you.
I will make sure that we get Sarah's email address posted on our website at wosu.org/allsides. So just go to the webpage that has titled Housing Security in the Coronavirus, and we'll include that email for people who have ideas. And I imagine you're also taking any kinds of supplies, as you mentioned, clothes and all that kind of stuff, but hand sanitizer, the usual, toilet paper, paper towel, the whole thing.
Absolutely. I know it doesn't, you know, we're in the boat with a lot of others, but we need toilet paper. I want to give a shout out to Ryan Lang and Middle West Spirits because they are actually helping us with hand sanitizer. And I just love when I see, you know, an organization, a business like that, that immediately responds to the needs. And so they're going to get us well supplied. And there's many others that are doing those kinds of things as well.
Pam, thanks for that call. Yeah, Bill Faith.
Yeah, let me just say something about volunteers. We need volunteers all across the system, all in virtually every community. But we have to remember that some of the people we need to move out of the shelter system in the deconcentration effort are people that are medically vulnerable, people that are seniors, people that are women that are pregnant, families with small children. These are people that are particularly vulnerable, and the volunteers need to keep that in mind. We lost a lot of volunteers when the pandemic hit because they were senior citizens. A lot of the church groups have a lot of senior volunteers. And so we've got to figure out strategies to use their skills and use their supplies, use the food they could donate, but do it in a safe way because we don't want to put our volunteers at unnecessary risk either. So I just say that, you know, it's kind of an all hands on deck approach, you know, doing supply drives and, you know, getting those supplies delivered to the shelters. I mean, there's a lot of ways that people can help, but I think we have to figure out kind of new ways to operate in light of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's exactly. Well, we will get to some calls. We will continue our conversation with Michelle Heritage, Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board here in Franklin County and Columbus, and also Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, with that statewide perspective. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The coronavirus poses many challenges to renters, landlords, homeowners, and also people who are homeless and the people who try to take care of them. Emergency shelters across the state have petitioned the federal and state government for help with adequate sanitation, hygienic supplies, and to minimize overcrowding. Still with us is Michelle Heritage. She's the executive director of Community Shelter Board, which responds to needs in Columbus and Franklin County. Also with us, Bill Faith, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, which gives us that statewide perspective. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill Faith, that COHIO report that you mentioned says that there's a gap between the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, guidance, and the homeless. What kind of guidance are you talking about?
Well, it's the guidance I mentioned earlier. It's basically, you know, they... Like, if you're feeling, you're not feeling well, stay home. You know, rest, take care of yourself at home.
Oh,
well, that's
okay.
Hard to do if you're in a shelter. Now, they have modified their guidance and are providing more guidance that's directed at this population. We are also working with, really, I have to give a shout out to our state leaders, particularly Governor DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton. And also Lori Chris, the director of Mental Health and Addiction Services, They have really stepped up and are doing just a fabulous job. And they are specifically focused now on the needs of homeless people across the state. They are helping us to develop, we're working with them closely to develop isolation and quarantine protocols for this population, as well as other guidance to the group so that they're that addresses the public health needs. I mean, we don't have medical staff on board at the shelters. That just isn't anything we've ever been able to afford. If it is, it's spotty and it's maybe once a week. So we have to have the public health and medical community's attention and help to pull this off. And the state folks are stepping up to sort of boost up that guidance so that it's more relevant to our situation.
And Michelle Heritage, what about students who are forced to move out of the dorms at Ohio State and the other housing that's provided by the university? Obviously, we assume if you're a college student, yay you, but that's not the case for everybody. For a lot of them, they were completely caught off guard and are finding themselves without a safe place.
It's true. I mean, and we do have people who are attending university and are experiencing literal homelessness, and certainly folks who without any advanced planning, have a really rough time finding a place to stay. We've been working closely with the universities on just saying, if you're finding a student that's in that situation, please let us know and we can try and help you work out what's happening. I do know that there are students who are staying in homeless shelters right now. I just had a call that I talked with Columbus State a couple days ago because we were talking about a student who we were looking for a place they could study inside the shelter while they're, you know, out of the school. How can they study? Mm-hmm. And we also know we're really excited because OSU, for example, we're having conversations with them about, is there a place or a way for us to use those vacant dormitories while students are not in there? Is there, you know, we have some specialized populations like youth who are under the age of 18 who are experiencing homelessness and families and things like this. And so the universities have stepped up to try to help us with this, and we're having conversations. And the mayor has talked to us and offered up the use of his recreation centers that are now vacant. So we're keeping everything on the table, but it's true. We know that there are students that are near homeless, and that the closure of those dorms, many of them were struggling to find a place.
Charlotte and Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Charlotte.
Yeah, good morning. I'm also wondering is what account is anyone taking of the influx of animals at the county animal shelter, as people are going to shelters or are themselves hospitalized? What preparations are they making for a tidal wave at the county animal shelter.
Well, I don't know if you guys can respond to that per se, but is that becoming an issue for you, Michelle Heritage?
It's not something that has been, we've been alerted to at this point. I think that as time goes on, that may be something that may be experienced in terms of if more people continue to become homeless. Obviously, if they have animals, we've got a challenging situation. The good news is on the domestic violence shelter, that shelter has been built out specifically to be able to keep the entire family together, including the furry members of the family and others. And so, but in the shelter system, we do not have any capacity to keep folks together with their animals. So it's an interesting call out, you know, frankly, not something we've considered about what might happen on the animal side.
And I'm thinking about the, you know, Bill, you mentioned that having medical personnel in shelters, even though I'm sure it's something you probably would love to have, is not something you're used to having. It's too expensive. And how do you find the help now that even the hospitals are trying to get more help?
Absolutely. So we just this morning did a strategy call with our neighborhood health centers across the state, the federally qualified health care providers. They have stepped up to say they want to partner their members with our members so that the basic medical care can be provided through those mechanisms. That won't be enough, but it's a good start, and we appreciate them stepping up. Randy Runyon is the lead guy with their association, and we had a great call with them to start that ball rolling. The other thing I want to point out, and this is a bit of a criticism, and I'm trying to avoid being too critical because I know everybody's overwhelmed, but, you know, when the county jails release mass numbers of people from incarceration, you know, they're giving them the shelter list as the housing plan. That is unforgivable, and that should be checked, and they need to be more thoughtful about who they're releasing and where they're releasing them to. That is a bad strategy. I mean, right now, as bad as it is in the county jails, they have some medical care available. They have more social distancing, as overcrowded as that situation is. They have more social distancing than we do at the shelters. So we just need to be more thoughtful about how we're implementing those kinds of strategies. I'm all for getting, you know, certain kinds of folks out of the jails who have minor offenses. I mean, it makes sense. If they could go back home, great. But if they have no home to go to, if they're in jail because of a status offense, really resulting from their homelessness, that should be planned out a little better. In the rush to try to get things implemented, we just need to be more thoughtful.
I have an email who asks whether you guys can give more detail about the positions that need filled. They want to help, but they want to stay well, too. Michelle Heritage?
Absolutely. So we actually are hiring right now, and we can send a link to you, and if you want to put it up on your website, you can pick it up on csb.org. But we need staff members who are going to be working in these shelters for isolation and quarantine, and we want everyone to know they will be trained. They will have the personal protective equipment that they need, and these jobs start at $25 an hour. So it's a good paying job, and we really need folks who want to work in those. And we also have the need for people to work in the deconcentration, those social distancing shelters where we're getting people spread out appropriately. And so we need to hire on both of those fronts, and having enough staff is going to be the thing that allows us to be successful in this. If we don't have the people to staff these shelters, then we just can't open them. So it's really a key. If people need jobs, these are good jobs, and we would love for them to apply.
And going back to what you were talking about, Bill Faith, it made me think about how many of those 400 to 500 people who are forced to live outside are you know, have records that prevent them for some reason from using a shelter. What do we know about that statewide, and how many people are forced to live outside with no shelter, all things being equal, because they have been convicted of felonies?
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's a barrier to shelter very often, because we don't do background checks at the front door of shelters. But,
no.
You know, it is a barrier for people to get into some housing options.
Okay.
So that's certainly a factor. I do think there is a large volume of people that are unsheltered or also in very unsafe circumstance. Lack of sanitation. They don't have a sink to wash their hands. For example, and they're in often they're crowded together in these encampments and other outdoor locations that are also not safe. So we're trying to implement outreach strategies to bring those people inside to the greatest extent we can, and that's another front that folks at the around the state are working on.
And I know it's not exactly in your wheelhouse, Michelle Heritage, but what about people who are also dealing with substance abuse issues, including people who are dependent on opioids right now? I mean, that's my usual crisis topic is the opioid epidemic.
Right. So this is a really complex, challenging issue. I had a call this morning with members from our Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board because we're working on this together. You know, you have a situation, all of our shelters in Franklin County are no barrier, which means we don't require anything of you when you come in. Obviously, you cannot use drugs and alcohol on the premises, but we don't require anyone to be sober. We're really trying to engage them, get them housed, and then, you know, at the same time working on these challenges. But what the really challenging population that we are trying to crack the nut is on folks who are in active addiction and then are being put into quarantine or isolation where they can't leave the building without endangering others. You know, there's withdrawals, and alcohol is one that is literally can be lethal for someone to withdraw from alcohol or from benzodiazepines without a medical intervention. So we're working now with partners from our Alcohol and Drug and Mental Health System, our Mental Health System Board, to really say, how can we stand something up where we can provide shelter that is appropriate and safe, and frankly, will probably be much more medicalized than the shelters, even that are having folks that are in isolation and quarantine that are homeless.
Bill Faith, we only have about a minute left, and I wanted you to kind of put it out there to people what you need and, you know, what's next. How much time do we have?
Well, we don't have any time to spare. I would say for the next 60 days, it's all hands on deck.
Michelle?
Everybody can help. I mean, they could give money to Michelle. They could give her other donations. We also have the Pandemic Emergency Fund, COHIO.org/COVID-19, and that money will go out to homeless programs around the state. But the next 60 days are really the most critical, particularly for those of us in the private sector who could help out, because the government money will take a while to arrive.
That's right. So I just would urge everyone to get involved in some way, even when you're home and you are staying safe, as you should be, listening to Dr. Acton. There's a lot that still can be done virtually. And as I've said, contact Sarah Loken over at CSB, and we can set you to work. And statewide, there's a lot of work to be done there, too. And COHIO is leading our efforts there and also needs lots of volunteer help and effort.
Michelle Heritage, Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board, and Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Thanks for everything you're doing. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having
me. Thanks, Ann.
That's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.